Back there with me, if you will, to Exodus chapter 2. We will draw from our text and make some applications, or at least continuing making the applications that we started last week. In Exodus chapter 2, we remember the setting is that the children of Israel had been taken captive in the land of Egypt. It had been prophesied by God to Abraham that while he would give him the land of Canaan, that before that happened, that his descendants would become a great nation, but in doing that, they would be in captivity. They would be slaves for 400 years. And then God would lead them out with a mighty hand and with power. And He would give them the land upon which Abraham had seen. And so this is a time in which the children of Israel are in bondage. And in Exodus chapter 2 and in verse 24, or beginning in verse 23, "Now it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. Then the children of Israel groaned because of the bondage, and they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered His covenant with Abraham and Isaac and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God acknowledged them." This passage has always stood out to me as one of tremendous encouragement. To know that God, in our deepest, darkest times of tribulation and trial, that He sees, that He hears, that He remembers, and that He acknowledges what we're going through. This gives me encouragement because I realize that in their case, and in every case of the righteous, of God's people that I see in the Bible, every case that's ever occurred with God's people, He does that very thing. And I know that He'll do it with me. Even in those times when it feels like He may not be near. We wonder, where is God now? What is He doing? How is He working in my life? I don't see His work. I don't see what's happening. All I see is the bad right now. It makes me realize that God is at work. During these years that the children of Israel were in bondage, they were groaning out of their bondage. We talked about the intercession of the Spirit several weeks ago in Romans chapter 8 and about the groaning of the Spirit, which I believe to be the human spirit. And here we have the groaning of the human spirit and the children of Israel, and that God heard that groaning and God was able to ascertain the meaning of that groaning, although in many cases it was a groaning and a pain and a suffering that was inarticulate. Unable to put into words, and yet our intercessor is able to know the hearts and the minds of men. So they're groaning to God. They're wondering, what will be their outcome? What's going to happen to the people of God? Will this be their lot forever and forever? Obviously, for four centuries, this went on. But that didn't mean that God wasn't working. And what we find is that God was raising up a deliverer. And he grew to the age of maturity, and then eventually at one point he goes out to defend his brethren, and they miss it. They miss the deliverance. They miss the deliverer. And this was clearly a shadow and a type of our deliverer, Jesus Christ, who in the same way his people missed their deliverance. Here he was coming to deliver them, and they cast him off. "Who made you a judge or a ruler over us?" As Stephen gives us the history of Israel, he talks about this happening to Moses, and clearly it pointed toward how the Jews did the same thing to Jesus. Moses then had to flee for his life, but God sent him back. He sent him back to deliver his people. And so God heard their groaning. He remembered his covenant, and he acknowledged them. What we noticed in this particular study is the beauty of God's ability to work in our lives when we don't always see it. The book of Revelation is a good New Testament picture of that same thing, where the people of God in that first century church were suffering so terribly under the hand of the Romans and the persecution that was going on at that time, many of them suffering death and torture. And they cried out to God, "How long, O Lord, before you avenge our blood?" That's in chapter 6. The rest of the book of Revelation is the answer to that question and that cry. And it's the answer to our cry and our question. But I would tell you that this question's been answered many times before, and we really find it answered here in Exodus chapter 2 and the rest of that book. God will deliver. God hears, He remembers, and He acknowledges. As we noticed last week, God hears the cry of suffering. We see that with the children of Israel. He hears the cry of bondage, and we think about our bondage to sin and how we need Him and we are completely helpless to set ourselves free. And He hears all things. That is certainly an awakening thought to know that God doesn't just hear the suffering of sin, but God hears when people speak against us. He hears when we are lied about. He hears when we are mistreated. And He hears when our thoughts may be against Him. Remember that that which is a beautiful thing can actually be a very convicting thing. If God hears those that speak against me, He hears me when I grumble and complain against Him. Remember the children of Israel, how many times they murmured against God. And God heard it. Moses many times would think that they were just murmuring against Him. But God said, "Oh no, Moses, I've heard what they're saying. And they're speaking these things against me." And God would cause them to suffer as a result of that, to remind them that He is God. He is at work. When they were thirsty, they assumed that God wasn't there, that He didn't see, that He didn't care. And they tempted God. They put Him to the test. "If You are our God, if You are all-powerful, if You do love us, You would give us water." God says, "Don't do that to me. I see, I hear, I remember, I acknowledge, and I redeem, I rescue. Don't put me to the test." We need to remember that when we're going through our difficult times. Don't put God to the test. Trust Him. Trust Him, pray, and realize that He makes all things good. He did for the children of Israel. He hears the obedient. But I want us to go on now in our study and to notice that God remembers. What a wonderful thing. Because I've got to tell you, I don't remember the way that I used to. Things just change like that. And I know that there are a few people that it seems like their rememberer never gets old. There's some folks, my uncle, Jamie Garrett's grandfather, I know you all remember Jamie, her grandfather visited here, and I think that he has the rememberer of an elephant. I don't know why we say elephants remember things, but somehow that's a metaphor. He remembers everything. I mean, going back, he remembers things I wish he didn't remember, but he can remember everything. And I used to be amazed at Jim Bedsworth and how he could remember things. Things that I would tell him in passing that I forgot. And he would remember them. Bring them up several years later. "Well, you remember this?" And he'd tell me something that I'd told him. And I'd think, "Oh yeah, I kind of wish you didn't remember that." But he just had that way of remembering. And my point is that that's not the norm. As we get older, things slip. We have to write things down. I'm so thankful for notes and reminders in my phone. And I forget things. And my failure many times is a result of these things slipping through the cracks. And there's a lot of cracks there in the mind as I get older. But the beautiful thing is that God is eternal. And He doesn't forget. He remembers. He remembers what I've been through. He remembers what I've asked for. That doesn't mean that I don't need to continue to ask. There's certainly the instruction of and the example of the persistent widow and the fact that we need to constantly come back to God and to plead with Him. Not because He forgets, but because it is a manifestation that we trust Him. That we know that the power is not in ourselves to work it out alone, but the power is in God. And so every time we return to God and we lay before Him our cares, we're saying to God, "I trust You." Not "You're forgetful," but "I trust You." The thing that we know is that God remembers. The psalmist in the 105th Psalm said, "He remembers His covenant forever. The word which He commanded for 1,000 generations." You remember Peter said in 2 Peter chapter 3, that God is not slack concerning His promises, as some men count slackness, but He is long-suffering, not willing that any should perish. When there is a large amount of time that's going on, it doesn't mean that God's forgotten. That's usually what it means for us. When I borrow something from you and you don't see it for a long time, I probably forgot that I've gotten it. That's why I keep a list of the borrowed books out of my library, because I know people don't mean to steal them from me. They just forget where it came from. That's why I have a little stamp I stamp in the front of my book, stolen from the library of Brett Hoagland. You might see that. That's a joke, really, but hopefully it makes people, oh, no, I did steal that from him. You know, we forget some of these things, and as time goes on, it becomes easier to lose sight of things, not for God. He remembers His covenant for 1,000 generations. That's more than 1,000 years, isn't it? Peter even tells us 1,000 years to the Lord is His day. But here he says 1,000 generations. A generation was essentially about 40 years. God does not forget His promises. In the same psalm, the 105th psalm, and in verse 42, he uses as an example of this, "For He remembered His holy promise and Abraham His servant." Now think about God's promise to Abram and Sarah that they would have a child. 25 years. Jennifer and I haven't even been married that long yet. We've been married 20 years. There's a lot that's happened. But 25 years waiting for a child. It's easy to be hard on Sarah and her faith failure when she gave Hagar, her handmaid, to Abram. But I'll tell you what, I've got to be careful, because I've never had to wait 25 years on the Lord. I thought it was a long time when I had to wait a few weeks or months. I thought it was difficult when I had to wait a little over a year or so for something that I've been praying for. But 25 years. But what we learn is that God remembered His holy promise and Abraham His servant. These things were written for our admonition, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11. They were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. And it is so that we don't forget that God never forgets. The prophet Isaiah in chapter 49, Isaiah 49 and in verse 15, God through the prophet said, "Can a woman forget her nursing child and not have compassion on the son of her womb?" Here is a metaphor that God knew that we would all understand. There are always exceptions. I realize that. We see mothers and fathers in the news that lack natural affection. But that's the exception and not the rule. The rule is a mother does not forget her nursing infant. She does not forget to have compassion on the son of her womb. Many of us as husbands sometimes may get frustrated that our wives are so caught up and absorbed in their children, in the care of their children. It's just something that comes natural to them, that nurturing thing. And it's what makes them so good at what they do. And God's asking a rhetorical question. Can a mother forget? The answer is no. Absolutely not. Then God says, surely they may forget. There may be times when they do. You may find exceptions to that rule, but He says, yet I will not forget you. He takes one of the surest things in life, the love of a mother. That is almost one of those things that is without exception. It is consistent, but not completely. And God says, I'm even more faithful than that. I've always been able to count on my parents. And God says He's even more faithful. Do you believe that? Moses, after leading the children out of the promise, out of Egypt and through the wilderness, as they were on the brink of the promised land, and just before he died, he's recounting God's wonderful works, and he's reading the law to them. And in Deuteronomy 4 and in verse 31, he says, "For the Lord your God is a merciful God. He will not forsake you nor destroy you, nor forget the covenant of your fathers which he swore to them." He's promising them, I know what things are going to look like. This is the failure that your ancestors had. They saw the giants, and they saw the walled cities, and they heard the report of the 10 unfaithful spies, and they thought, God can't do this. We can't do this. And Moses is saying, God will not forget His covenant. He's going to follow through. He's going to do what He says He's going to do. The psalmist in the 136th Psalm said, and in verse 23 and 24, 136th Psalm, verse 23 and 24, "Who remembered us in our lowly state, for His mercy endures forever, and rescued us from our enemies, for His mercy endures forever." The psalmist is speaking about the children of Israel in times when, even after being led out of Egypt in that bondage into the promised land, they left God behind. So He delivered them into captors again and became slaves. But He wouldn't forget them. He would remember them, and He would rescue them, and He would give them freedom and deliverance. And they would be faithful for a while, then they would forget Him and leave Him and depart again. He'd deliver them back into the hands of the captors. But God never forgot them. He never forgot where He left them. He never forgot His relationship with them and the covenant that He made with their fathers. He remembers. He remembered Noah. Imagine how lonely that must have been for Noah and his family on that ark. All those days wondering if things would ever be the same. Wondering what is to come of us? What is to come of this earth? In Genesis 8 and verse 1, "Then God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the animals that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subsided." God doesn't forget. What a beautiful, beautiful thing that God doesn't forget. Remember with Hannah? Hannah, she was barren, and she was crying out to God. And in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and in verse 19, "Then they rose early in the morning and worshipped before the Lord and returned and came to their house at Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife, and the Lord remembered her." In all of our trials, whether it be suffering or tribulation or just something like Hannah was going through, you know, this is a natural occurrence. Some people have certain health problems. Some people are unable to bear children. Some people have limitations in life that it seems unjust to us, and time and chance happens to everyone. These are just some of the frailties of this life. But she cried out to God, and God heard her. He spoke to her through Eli, and God remembered her, and she bore the son Samuel. Yes, God is true to His covenant. In Hebrews chapter 8 and verse 10, the Hebrew writer said, "For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. I will put my laws in their mind and write them on their hearts. I'll be their God. They should be my people." Verse 12, "For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness and their sins and their lawless deeds. I'll remember no more." I can guarantee you God remembers that covenant. And every time that we turn to Him and call upon Him, He will remember us. But we need to be mindful of something here. As beautiful a thing as it is that God remembers, we need to return the favor. We need to remember as well. God assures us that He remembers all things, but He calls upon us to be mindful and to remember things as well, like in Galatians 2. In Galatians 2 and in verse 10, the Bible says, "They desired only that we should remember the poor, the very thing which I was eager to do." God remembers us in our poor and lowly state. Do we remember the poor? We want God to remember us when we're going through financial difficulty and hardship. Do we remember those who are going through the same when we've been blessed? Or do we go back to living a lifestyle, no matter how much God blesses us with, to where we are just a little bit behind, so that we always feel like we don't have anything to help with or to give? In Hebrews 13 and in verse 3, the Hebrew writer said, "Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body also." And think about that as it applies to us. To remember our brethren and those who are mistreated, those who are suffering. We don't have brethren around us, at least in this country, that are in chains for their faith. May get to that someday, but praise to God that we don't live in a place like that today. There are places around the world that are like that, though. We need to remember them in our prayers. But we need to be mindful of our brethren who are mistreated. We need to be mindful of those who are suffering with the ravages of mortality and illness in the body. Those that are going through the challenges of old age, the changes in life, and the things that they go through, that we certainly will go through if this earth continues long enough. We need to remember them and not be forgetful. And then in verse 7 of Hebrews 13, "Remember those who rule over you, who've spoken the word of God to you, whose faith follow, considering the outcome of their conduct." We need to remember and be mindful of those who are serving in leadership, elders in this particular case, who have that tremendous weight and responsibility of shepherding and guiding the flock. And then, of course, in Luke 22 and in verse 19, Jesus took bread and gave thanks and broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." 1 Corinthians 11:24 recounts the same thing. We'll be doing that in the next hour of our worship. Have you forgotten? God doesn't. We may, but He does not. We need to take heart in that. He does not forget His covenant. He does not forget our works. The psalmist in the ninth psalm and in verse 12 said, "When He avenges blood, He remembers them. He does not forget the cry of the humble." Hebrews 6 and verse 10. Hebrews 6 and verse 10. "For God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love, which you have shown toward His name, in that you've ministered to the saints and do minister." Sometimes it is easy to get discouraged and to feel like everything that we've been doing is for nothing. God's assuring us it's not. That doesn't mean that there's not going to be more to do. God's, as long as we're alive and living in this body, God is going to have responsibilities. And as we fulfill those and we work for the Lord, it's good for us. You know, we look at work as simply a task that I just want to finish. But God is trying to help us to understand that our work in the kingdom, our work for the Lord, is something that will go on as long as we live because it's good for us. Our labor of love is something that's good for us. We've got to change our perspective and not look at it as something to mark off a list and I just want to hurry up and finish doing this so that I can go and do that. We need to understand that to this we were called. We finished this, now there's another responsibility. And so find joy in those things. And as we mature as Christians, the responsibilities change. We look at the challenges that people in the Bible faced, and the more they matured, I think about what Abraham went through with sacrificing his only son. He had reached the pinnacle. And to some degree, I think that makes some of us think, I don't want to get there. I don't want to mature to that point. The thing is, God does not allow us to be tested above what we are able. It'll always be within what is a challenge. It sets it out there for us so that we stretch out for it. We make ourselves stronger. And there's a gratification. There's a feeling of victory. We are more than conquerors, the Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 8. And it's because there are constantly those challenges that we reach for. We've got to view it in that way. To have that spirit, that fervent spirit that we were talking about in our Bible class on Wednesday night. that is boiling over with zeal, that I can do more. I want to do more. I want to be more. Hate to put everything into an athletic metaphor, but I was just watching a little bits and pieces of an interview with Kobe Bryant, and whatever you may think of him or however you may feel about him, not that he was a great moral example, but as far as a person who set goals for himself and worked especially hard for those, it was interesting to me the way that he viewed his role as an athlete. It didn't matter what he accomplished, he constantly set the goal farther. And he realized, he spoke about that feeling of gratification, complete victory that he felt when that goal was set further and it was accomplished. And it made him want to just grow that much more and to challenge himself more. This is what we have to understand in our work for the Lord. This is what makes us joyful, is accomplishing these things instead of looking at them as another task, another trial, another prayer service, another gospel meeting. When we view the work of the Lord like that, we are self-defeating. We've got to view it in a way of being excited. Men's Bible study is coming up. That's right. This is our week for our study. Ladies' Bible class is coming up. This is Thursday. Our Bible study is coming up, and we look forward to it. How much am I going to progress? What am I going to learn in this particular Bible study? It's all in our mindset. And to remember this, that God remembers. He sees and He hears, He knows, He acknowledges our work and our labor of love. He does not overlook these things. How many times in the book of Revelation did He say to the churches, I know your works, your labor? The church at Ephesus, the church at Thyatira, the church at Laodicea, three or four times there He mentions it. But I want you to realize something else. God remembers our losses, and I am so very thankful for this. God remembers what we've given up and what we have lost for His sake. You know, in Revelation 2 and in verse 9, when He spoke to the church at Ephesus, I know your works, the church thought, I know your works, tribulation, and poverty, but you are rich. And I know the blasphemy of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. God's assuring them, I remember what you've been through. Don't think that I've forgotten it. In Mark chapter 10, and in verse 29, Jesus answered and said, assuredly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my sake and the gospel's, who shall not receive 100-fold now in this time, houses, brothers, sisters, mothers, children, and lands with persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life. He said, you're going to, what you lose, I'll give back. Did you notice He said, and I'll give it back in a basket that has persecutions with it in this life. When you lose something in this life, I'll give it back, but don't think that I'm going to give it back and it's going to be free of any trial or problem. As long as it's in this life, your blessings will always be sprinkled and intermingled with trials. Because those things together make us better. Paul recognized in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, when I am weak, then I am strong. He gloried in his tribulation. He once prayed that God would remove that thorn in the flesh, but after he realized and learned the lesson, he said, I am thankful. I boast in my tribulation because I learn that when I am weak, then I'm strong. Because when I'm going through these times, I turn to God. My relationship with God becomes stronger. That's why God gives us blessing, to remember He's there, and tribulation to draw us near to Him. Let's not resent the tribulation. Let us not forget or take for granted the blessing. In Nehemiah chapter 5, I've always appreciated the maturity that Nehemiah had. As he went back and he led the children of Israel to rebuild the walls around Jerusalem. And in doing so, there were so many tribulations, so many trials, and one of them was the poverty of the people. And they were in deep distress financially. And so in verse 14, Nehemiah in chapter 5 and verse 14 said, "Moreover, from the time that I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year until the 32nd year of King Artaxerxes, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the governor's provisions." And he had a right to this. He had a right to be able to, there was a certain menu, if you will, that the governor had the right to receive from the people. As it was a tax, essentially, that they took of their provisions and provided it to him for his meals. He says in verse 15, "But the former governors who were before me laid burdens on the people and took from them bread and wine besides 40 shekels of silver. Yes, even their servants bore rule over the people. But I did not do so because of the fear of God." You think about that. Nehemiah said, I had a right to these things, but I didn't take them because I feared how God would view that. He understood that to take from the poor more than he needed would be looked down upon by God. You know, there's some things that we may have a right to as a Christian, but it's not required. We've talked about that before, but in Romans 14, we'll be seeing that Wednesday night in our last class on Romans. And also in 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Those two chapters are talking about things that we have a right to do that we need to forego for the good of others. And this is exactly what Nehemiah did. But listen to what Nehemiah said. Verse 16, "Indeed, I also continued to work on this wall, and we did not buy any land. All my servants were gathered there for the work. And at my table were 150 Jews and rulers, besides those who came to us from the nations around us. Now that which was prepared daily was one ox, six choice sheep, also fowl were prepared for me, and once every 10 days an abundance of all kinds of wine. Yet in spite of this, I did not demand the governor's provisions, because the bondage was heavy on this people." Now listen to verse 19. "Remember me, my God, for good, according to all that I have done for this people." I'd encourage you to highlight that verse, maybe write it down. Because that is a good prayer that each one of us needs to pray. Because if we're doing what we ought to do as children of God, there are going to be a lot of times when we're going above and beyond what is required of us. When we are doing more, or we're giving more, giving up more for the good of the church and of our brethren, then what should be, or maybe ought to be, expected of us in a reasonable sense as far as people are concerned, but we care more about the good of God's people than we do about our own personal welfare. What was Nehemiah doing? He's saying, "I'm going to commit this to you, God. I'm going to take care of you, and whatever loss I incur, I'm going to commit that to you and just trust you. I know you will repay it better than I could pay myself." That's what Jesus did with His vengeance. And that's what you and I have got to do. I'm going to tell you, if this church is going to be successful in glorifying the Lord, in being a light to this community, if we're going to grow, if we're going to go from where we have been and where we are to where we want to be, I'm going to tell you, there's probably no other element more important than for each one of us individually to have the mindset of Nehemiah and be willing to do more than we think we ought to do or have to do, and to do it willingly. To sacrifice. We talked about that just a couple of weeks ago. When there is a need for teachers, I've got a few teachers that every time tell me, "Brett, I know I've been teaching well past the two-quarter period, but keep me in there if you need me." And there are others that It doesn't take a lot to have a reason not to help. And I'm telling you, we're in a different place now than we were when I moved here 4 years ago. We had an abundance of teachers. We're thin now. And this is just one example. There are a whole lot of other areas where we need help in accomplishing things that need to be done to prepare for a gospel meeting, things that need to be done to prepare for the youth lectures, people to open their homes and to show hospitality and to keep people during the youth lectures, to keep the preacher, to feed the preacher during a gospel meeting or other things like that. There are so many things that need to be done. Work that needs to be done before VBS. All of the work on the building, the preparation of the classrooms, and the work on the curriculum. And joy in doing those things. And there are fewer people to do it, so there's a greater workload, more people needed. Teachers to teach ladies' Bible class. Men to participate in the men's Bible studies. There is a tremendous need for all of us on an individual level. Instead of counting on someone else to do it, looking to someone else to do it, for each one of us to look at ourselves like Nehemiah and say, I know I can probably get to heaven without doing this. The Bible doesn't say I have to do this, but I see that there's a need in this congregation. And while it's going to be difficult for me to do it, where there's a will, there's a way. I'm going to find a way. I want to tell you, it transforms congregations when everybody joyfully gives more than they have to give. And the way you do that is to know and to trust that God will remember that and that He is going to make it up. I'll tell you, this world's not our home. This is not where we're going to really find the fullness of the maturity of our note. That's going to be in heaven. And that's what we really need to be striving for. God remembers these things. Well, we're going to have another study on the fact that God acknowledges. And this is a whole other aspect of this. That God not only hears our groanings, He hears our cries to Him, and He remembers His promises. He remembers what we've done. But I want us to notice in our next study how God truly acknowledges and how aware He is of everything in our life. If you will, bow with me in prayer, and then we will be dismissed to our classes.